Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 81 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again. Today's podcast, as usual, brought to you by Vortex, the power of optics. So thanks everyone over at Vortex Canada for continuing to support the podcast. We truly appreciate it. So today is kind of our Christmas edition, right? It's going to be the last one of the year. As you know, I'm a week late. It's been 3 weeks since we did a podcast, and I'm going to tell you why that is in a second. It's going to be the usual format. I'm going to bring on Tracy Wilson to update you on all the stuff that she's doing. And then I'm going to tell you what I'm up to and some other things that are going on at the CCFR. So I guess the first thing we'll talk about right now is the reason why I'm a week late doing a podcast. Well, I might have mentioned, maybe not in the last episode or maybe the one before that, the podcast is going video here pretty soon. And I wanted this episode to be the first video one. If I'm going to go through all the trouble, I want our podcast to be like everything else at the CCFR. If we're going to do it, we're going to do it to the best of our ability and better than anything that came before it. And that's the goal. Not always achievable. Okay. That's because we're just regular people. Right. But that's the idea. And so anyway, I created a video podcast a week ago and it's really, really nice, but it was a tremendous amount of work and I needed a few edits in it. And I'm like, oh man, I can't redo a bunch of this work just to get this thing out. And so anyway, long story short, the way that I was bringing this thing into video, because I want it to be almost like a television show, right? I want it to be good. I don't want it to be just a Zoom meeting where everybody's just sitting around talking. That's not good enough for us, right? So I want it to be something really unique and really awesome. Something that's entertaining just to sit and watch, right? And then of course, if I can find the time, because we're busy doing advocacy, I want to start bringing on guests again, right? Because I had some really interesting guests go on when COVID first hit, and it was more like a talk show, right? Rather than just an update with the CCFR. But we got busy again because the gun ban happened and we did all the things that we've done since the gun ban, right? The 68 full page ads across the country and newspapers, the television specials, the television series, right? Gun Ban Canada Exposed, the lawsuit. There's a lot of things that we've been up to, right? So I wasn't able to continue it. So anyway, I'm building the platform for this thing. It's taken me a long time and I'm not finished. I probably got 30 more hours of work to create I built a studio for this thing, like literally built it, right? And the technological, the hardware platform to run it like a television show. So that's almost in place. I got about 30 hours of work yet to do. And so I was unable to get a podcast out, a week ago. So you're getting an audio only one. And I'm hoping, I can't promise this to you because we have other things going on other than the podcast, right? But I'm hoping that this is the last one that's audio only. So look forward to seeing that pretty soon. All right. Other updates. Episode 3 of Gun Ban Canada Exposed came out there, a week and a half ago. Hopefully everyone loved it. It was I put more work into that episode than I put into any video episode in my life, any video project in my life. I thought it was really good. Unfortunately, not everybody wants to come on a television show and be pro-gun. You wonder why. Look at the stuff that gets thrown at us. But that's why. And so the majority of it, well, almost all of it was just me, right? So, which is very hard to carry an episode like that, just being me. And there's a lot of dialogue. It's about 2,500 word essay that's required to do one episode of Gun Ban Canada Exposed. And of course, it has to make sense and it has to flow and it has to segue from one thing to another. It has to prioritize important information. You have to understand the narrative, what we're trying to say, without, you know, me leading you right there. And so anyway, it was a lot of work. So hopefully you all enjoyed episode 3. But again, the most important thing you can do is share it. If you're on Twitter and people are like, oh, you know, the gun lobby's got nothing, we have all the facts, just go post it, right? It's right there on YouTube. Go there, get the share link and post it and say, you know what? I disagree. The evidence is not overwhelming that more guns equal more death, and watch this, you know, and feel free to refute anything that's in that video, anything. I keep all of the references to every one of those episodes. I have them all. So if anyone says, you know what you said wasn't true, number one, I would take them at their word because I'd be like, oh, that's possible. I'm just a normal person. And then I'll go back and I'll look and I'll post all the references if need be. It's not a problem. So I don't make unsubstantiated claims, unlike some other people that are in this, gun control versus firearm rights argument, right? So I'm prepared to back up anything I say. So anyway, episode 3, share it. If you like it and you think it's valuable, make sure you share it around. That's the best thing you can do. Episode 4 is coming out, and I think it's going to be out on, I think it's airing on Wild TV. No wonder I don't have those dates. I had the wrong sheet. It was my old one for the other version of this podcast. It's going to air on, I think, December the 23rd on Wild TV. So once it airs on Wild TV on the 23rd, then it will be uploaded and be made available on the 24th, which is Christmas Eve, oddly enough, but the 24th of December. That's my Christmas present to all of you. It's the crappiest present ever. It's a bunch of, very negative, they're coming after our guns and they have no argument kind of stuff. But nonetheless, if you want to watch it on the 24th, that's fine. If not, don't watch it on the 24th. Don't spoil your Christmas. Watch it between Christmas and New Year sometime when you're sitting, counting all the money and looking at all the presents you got for Christmas. Maybe you can flick that on there. It'll be available on the CCFR channel. So just go to YouTube and type in CCFR channel. You'll find it. And there's a playlist there that's Gun Ban Canada Exposed. And again, as I've said 100 times, but I can't stress how important it is when you watch it. If you approve of it, if you say, you know what, this is good content and this lays out the argument better than I could, make sure that you share it. Make sure that you personally ask as a favor to you, people in your life, to watch that. And so that they can hear your side of the story. Okay. Really, really important. All of this is useless if you guys aren't doing that. Just so you know, I'm working on episode 5 right now. The four episode limited series got extended by 3 episodes. Signed that deal with Wild TV a couple weeks ago. So we're going to have 5, 6, and 7. The 7th episode is going to be a 1-hour wrap-up special that hits home on everything that we talked about in that limited series. So you're going to have 7 episodes, which I guess equals 8 because the last one's an hour. But basically you have 7 episodes in a row that tell the whole pro-gun side of the story. And never before have we had content like that where you can say, hey, if you want to know everything there is to know, obviously not really, but pretty close, right? About why gun owners disagree with gun bans and further regulations. And you want to hear our side of the story? If you truly do, boom, here you go. Just watch these. Someone went through all the trouble to aggregate and fact check everything so that you can see that side of the story because you hear the other side of the story constantly. So this is for all of us. And it's whether you're a CCFR member or not, just share it, okay? And thank you to the CCFR members and the people that have donated and helped us because you are the reason why that stuff exists, right? Like I wrote it and I performed it and I did all whatever, produced it to some degree. But it's the only reason that I could do that is because you guys are there with me and with the CCFR. You funded the CCFR so we could do these things. So make good use of them. So episode 5 is about Canadian gun culture. It's going to answer the question, like, why does anybody need a gun? And why are guns so important to the people that own them? So if you guys remember, if you saw those posts, I went to CGN and also to Facebook. And I said, hey, if anybody's got historic pictures of Canadian pictures of semi-autos, send them to me. I got lots, so that's great. I'm just making the point in the episode to say, hey, guns are nothing new in Canada. They've been around since before Confederation, including semi-autos have been around 100 years in this country, right? So this is nothing new. This is not a recent phenomenon. And so I wanted some actual historic proof for that. Next thing, the injunction hearing for our court cases on January the 18th. You've heard me announce that a couple of times, but that is going to be, that's for the injunction, meaning that we're asking the court, hey, listen, we believe that this case is on faulty factual grounds. While it gets decided, can we agree that the OIC has no effect? It's a very difficult thing to get a favorable ruling like that. I don't you know, when I look at the case, and I'm nobody, right? But when I look at the case and what's required to get an injunction, to make an injunction valid and get that kind of ruling, I look at the case, I'm like, yeah, this is a slam dunk, you know, but we have a legal system. It's not always the justice system. So that's the only thing that's running against us, obviously, right? So anyway, keep your fingers crossed. If you want to donate directly to the CCFR Legal Fund, we need donations. I'll tell you right now, this whole thing has been very expensive. No one has created a case like we have before on behalf of gun owners. It's huge, like thousands of pages of documents. And you know what? Even if we're not successful, the institutional knowledge that we've aggregated through this exercise will live because we've made all of these documents public. So every lawyer has access to them now. And every gun group has access to them now. And that's an asset for our entire community. Again, and it was only possible and will only be possible in the future by people helping us pay for it, right? Because, you know, we spent a lot of money on this, right? So anyway, if you can become a member, if you're not a member, or donate anytime in the near future, that would be most appreciated, I should say. All right. I think I've got some other things, but I'm going to hold on to them for the next episode. We've got a lot of big projects coming up in January. But I think I'm going to hang on to mentioning those because not everybody that's on the inside of the CCFR has even heard the status of these projects. And I don't want to, let the cat out of the bag. And then sometimes people will be like, hey, how come I have to hear things on the podcast for me, you know, being an insider to, you know, to know that they're happening? Why do I have to listen like everybody else? So sometimes I get into trouble with the board a little bit. But I guess it's better to ask for forgiveness rather than permission. Oh, yeah. The other last thing I wanted to mention before I wrap it up and bring Tracy on is that you may or may not be aware that this whole thing with the Globe and Mail, Patrick White writing a story about the public safety minister, Bill Blair, and through his spokesperson, Mary Liz Power, made an accusation that we, the gun lobby, and they're probably talking about us, I can only assume, that we coordinated and encouraged and supported threats and intimidation to the CEO of Altus Recruiting for participating and helping to implement the gun buyback, right? And, you know, they said this publicly. It's very damaging, and it set off a firestorm against the CCFR. Nothing that we haven't seen before, or nothing that we can't deal with at some level. But we have sent a defamation notice to Bill Blair and Mary Liz Power, and we're prepared to move forward on litigating them for saying defamatory things. The truth of the matter is, and Tracy's going to come on, and we'll get into the details. Truth of the matter is, we didn't coordinate any of that stuff, and these people all coordinated their efforts. At least it seems like it, and defamed us across the entire country in the Globe and Mail and also online, and anybody that, and also in a press release from the Minister of Public Safety. And we're at a point where we're not letting people get away with this anymore. If they are hurting gun owners and hurting our organizations, and especially when we had no part to play in any of that, it's untrue. We're going to punch back. So we are preparing to litigate the Minister of Public Safety and his spokesperson. It's not the first litigation, and we're considering litigating the journalist as well. And it's not the first time we're litigating a guy named AJ Somerset right now. He's now a defendant in an action for defaming the CCFR. And we're litigating The Walrus, which is an online publication that's a registered charity. And now they're defending a litigation as well for publishing things that are demonstrably untrue and highly damaging of the CCFR. So, you know, I get into it more with Tracy because I just got off the Skype with her. But I'll tell you, you know, you wanted an organization that actually punches back, and we're doing it. So that's the way it is. We're not going to let these people walk all over us and tell lies and defame us anymore. We're not doing it. So anyway, that's about it. So I'm going to hang this up right now, and I'm going to get Tracy on the Skype. So stand by. All right. On the Skype, I've got Wilson. Wilson.
Giltaka, it's the Christmas episode. I don't know.
That's pretty Christmassy.
Yeah, that's my jingle bells.
Do you carry those around with you normally, or?
Yeah, I wear them every day.
Starting December 1st?
Yes. That's correct.
And then they take them off on January the 7th.
I'm just trying to bring a little Christmas cheer, you know.
Well, it's tough, but that's an admirable pursuit, and I want to support that. So, you know, Christmas is awesome.
Okay.
Clank, clank, clank.
Okay.
Are you sure those aren't shot glasses? They're actually jingle bells.
I think it's actually a bag full of 22 ammo, but whatever.
Yeah.
Fine.
It's a bunch of brass you haven't reloaded yet, and you're jingling around.
Totally.
Okay. Well, right. let's power through this, because there's actually a lot to talk about. And obviously, we don't want to bore people into next year. No. But I guess the first thing is the Gunny Girl calendar.
Yeah. So the bad news is they're sold out. The good news is that means the girls were successful in raising their $25,000 for the CCFR Women's Program. We 2 weeks ago, we had a couple calendar signings at Select Shooting Supplies, Bullseye North, and then the following weekend at SFRC, and they were a huge hit. So those are completely sold out. I don't know what to tell you. I guess next year people got to get on these a little quicker, or maybe we'll order more. But a big thank you to everybody out there for supporting the CCFR Women's Program, and this funding goes directly into hosting events across the country to let women have a try at the shooting sports, where otherwise they may not have that opportunity.
Well, right now they don't have that opportunity. So let's hope that sometime soon ranges can get back open and start having events again.
Yes.
We did a lot of those. I mean, I think over the 5 years we operated, you know, 4 years minus COVID, right?
Yeah.
I think we did, what, like 150 or something like that, events like that?
Yeah, like a lot. Yeah. I mean, some of them we host, some of them we just sponsor and help out, some of them we send volunteers to. But yeah, I mean, these are a great way to sort of get grassroots advocacy with, you know, Canadian voters and just citizens that may not really, you know what it's all about. So changing hearts and minds.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And then next on the news desk here is our friend, our gun friendly and reasonable Dr. Ozzy on Twitter. I guess he was getting into Twitter fights with the extremist spin doctors, and they sicked their friends, the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario, on him.
Yeah, the hypocrisy there is just a little mind-blowing, right? So it's an interesting situation, because first of all, the CPSO, of course, it's self-regulation. It's their community regulating themselves. And it just sort of shows how you can weaponize that to, you know, to shut up anybody that's maybe doesn't agree with you in your own profession. So yeah, poor Dr. Oz.
Yeah, well, it is so incredibly hypocritical, because you have the unhinged Dr. Alan Drummond running around on Twitter self-immolating probably on a weekly basis, just absolutely showing what knuckle draggers doctors can be at some point. Some doctors, obviously, not all. They don't represent all doctors by any means. And he's left completely harmless. He can do whatever he wants. But if you're pro-gun, or at least pro-truth, like, there should be a conversation around the doctor's position. Forget it. The full weight of the regulatory system is levied upon you while these other guys do whatever they want. They've really created a mess for themselves, I think. It's, you know, they've really hurt their own reputations for acting like children online and in person. And then when they think it's interesting, because they think they're winning. Like, oh yeah, you know, we're pulling the strings over the CPSO and at the Canadian Medical Association. There are so many doctors I've talked to, because I know it's a shocker. A lot of doctors talk to us, and a lot of doctors give us money to keep fighting these people. Yeah. They say that they want nothing to do with the CMA anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, the whole thing has become a small group of people just using it as their own personal pet, you know, their own personal baseball bat to hammer other people over the head with. And I mean, you know, it's funny. We see that behavior in government. We call that corruption. And then we see that very similar behavior. It's just, and I think it's universal. It's people that want to, you know, put their values and dictate their values to everybody else, or their ideas or their wants, and use force, in this case, regulation, regulatory bodies and trade groups. to, you know, just to force their way onto everybody else. And whether you're a doctor or you're in government or whatever, the minute people, some people get some power or influence, they just go stinking crazy, man.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing too, at a time in this country, we're in the middle of a health emergency. And at a time like this, when you're politicizing the medical profession the way they have, I took some heat on Twitter from the lobby doctors about this, but I stand by it. I mean, you know, I'm almost 50 years old. I've seen doctors throughout my life. I've had serious medical issues. And I'm telling you, it makes me shy away from going to see a doctor. Now, I recognize, I would say the overwhelming majority of doctors do not agree with them, right? They are a very small, very loud and well-funded group. But the politicization erodes the trust that Canadians have in their healthcare professionals. And at a time like this, with what we're going through right now, it's not the time for that. And then you wonder why you've got conspiracy theorists and these, you know, all this crazy stuff going on social media with people doubting the messaging coming out of health professionals. So I don't think they're doing their profession a service with their actions at all.
Well, they're doing themselves a service.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly, incredibly narcissistic.
Yes.
But no, I mean, even if you look at the politicization of the medical system, even with COVID, it's, you know, I think people are so confused right now. Because it's always like, oh, my word against yours. I got the white coat. So even if I'm wrong, I'm right. And people, that really screws with people's heads. And there's a large segment of our population that can't take that kind of instability in institutions. Institutions everywhere are collapsing.
Oh, yeah.
So, and this is the reason, like, you know, some people just can't handle power or influence. They just literally can't handle it. And,
no.
You know, again, this is the kind of thing that's gone on for thousands and thousands of years. And it's the same people reincarnated every time, and they blow everything up because they just can't handle themselves like normal people. And it's not very good, man.
No.
All right.
Yeah. It's wild.
Anyway, enough of that. Enough of that stuff. You can hear the filter pop up, eh?
Yeah, I know exactly what you were thinking because I felt it too. Family friendly show, Gil Taka.
Yeah, it's going to be so bad when it's not live, but live to tape, which is how we're changing it soon. And it's going to be very difficult.
Challenging.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the situation with Altus recruiting. That was an interesting story.
So this is an interesting story that sort of went a little wild. So I had received information that public safety had publicly published the fact that they had awarded a contract for the project manager for the federal firearms buyback program. So they put that information out there. I shared it out to the public. I was busy doing stuff with my family. As most people know, there's some family stuff going on. I went and dealt with that all day. I come back to the office. And there's all kinds of stuff all over Twitter, Facebook, you know, people were sharing it around or whatever, and it all kind of blew up. And I was like, wow, what's going on? By that point, Catherine Tremblay, who's the CEO of Altus, had pulled out of the contract. She was like, you know what, forget it. So I was like, wow, what went on here? So I pick up the phone and, well, first it was through email. We sent a couple emails back and forth. And I said, look, what's going on here? She had published a statement saying she was receiving harassment, intimidation, you know, possibly some sort of threats. And I was like, what? Like, what went on? And, you know, she was insinuating that it was coming from the firearms community. So although I did no call to action, I didn't ask anybody to do anything. I thought, well, you know, I can probably help mitigate this. I'd like to think, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I'd like to think that my voice or my, you know, if I'm asking you to do something or not do something, I'm hoping that people listen to me, whether they're CCFR members or just Twitter, you know, followers or whoever, right? So I spoke with Catherine and, you know, I gave her some tips on what to do as somebody who receives daily threats of violence and all kinds of horrible stuff online. I had some tips on how to handle that, how to mitigate some of that, how to filter it out. And then I said, and you know what I'll do is I'll put out a, basically the opposite of a call to action. I'm going to ask these people, even though I never, instigated it, I'm going to ask these people just to lay off, right? At the same time, there was a story brewing and this all came out, but I got to say, so there was something that I did do that was a little, I don't want to say questionable, but you know, it maybe it was done in bad taste. It was kind of funny at the moment. So what happened was Altus on their public profile on LinkedIn had some photos of their staff. Now these are, excuse me, non-identifying photos. There's no names or information about who's in the photos. They're publicly available photos that they've published. And I guess it was some sort of Halloween party or costume party, and they're wearing feather boas and kitty masks and all this stuff. So I'm sitting here with Colin, who's my, you know, tattooed, muscled up combat veteran spouse. And it was sort of a joke. Like, I'm looking at these pictures of feather boas and kitty masks, and I'm like, hey, babe, here's the people, you know, tasked with the program to come and take your guns. And he just kind of laughed like, yeah, right. You know, and that was basically the end of it. So because it was so funny to us, I put it, I made a post on Twitter and Facebook. I put it out there and it had a lot of shares and people, the majority of people, 98% of people thought it was funny too, for the exact same reasons, you know. And, but I did receive some feedback from one of our members, from somebody in the firearms community, a CCFR member, who said, you know, I don't, Tracy, I get it, but I don't really think that's helpful. I don't think it's really helpful to do that. And I was like, you know what? I think you're right. My intention wasn't to hurt anybody or put anything out there. It was just sort of a joke, right? Looking at this big tattooed guy with his big buff muscles and then the feather boa wearing kitties, right? So I said, you know what? Yeah, you're right. That's probably not helpful. And I took those, the tweet and the Facebook post down. Now that was before all this stuff blew up. So I still to this day am not entirely sure what type of threats Catherine had received. I did ask her to forward them to me because I would like to vet the threats to see if they're, you know, actual CCFR members or any of our volunteers or anybody on our team. Of course, nothing was ever provided to me. And that's okay. You know, you got to take people at their word. And she would have no real reason to be dishonest with me. We had a great conversation, lasted about a half hour, and she was really thankful. I told her, you've got my number now, keep it. If you ever have any questions or you need a hand with anything in the future, I'm right here to be a resource to you. So that's sort of where that stood as far as I was concerned. But yeah.
That was the extent of your interaction with Altus and what have you.
That's correct. That's it. That was the end of it as far as I was concerned.
Right. And then from there, it goes to public safety. Bill Blair, through Mary Liz Power, his spokesperson, you know, talk about the gun lobby, you know, issuing whatever. I can't remember exactly what it was, but basically it's, you know, we organized or orchestrated or something. Again, you'd have to go look at their statement. I think it's still out there. We orchestrated threats to, you know, to force these people out on how it's unacceptable and whatever. And when he says gun lobby, it's obviously it's us. Yeah, so we've, anyway, that spawned a story in the Globe and Mail written by Patrick White. I talked to Patrick day before yesterday myself. And basically how they laid that out was they needed to make that legitimate. They needed to hurt us, you know, even though we didn't play any part in this whatsoever, they needed to hurt us because it's really not about what's true. It's just fooling people into thinking something. And then somehow that means you've won. Right. So what he does is he says, you know, CEO, whatever, receives online threats. Then they're like, ooh, maybe there was no threat. So they changed the story later to online abuse. Again, this is par for the course with the Canadian media. This is why it's in free fall collapse. Media everywhere, right? Because they all act the same, right? They're like, stand back and like, oh, well, I didn't mean, no, I was, that's not the tone of the story. I think you misunderstood. It's like, well, it says online abuse, then a picture of the CCFR Integrity March with a guy wearing a CCFR t-shirt. Yeah. Then under that, it's like gun owners marched on Ottawa, blah, 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 blah. And then the first two paragraphs about all this, you know, garbage that went on, you know, with the, you know, the online abuse and everything. And then he interviews you.
Yeah.
So anybody, and everybody knows how this works. I think most people should know, most people that are paying attention, which is If you're reading the news, you look at the headline. Oh, gun lobby, you know, levies abuse at CEO, and they pulled out of a contract. There's the CCFR logo and people that went to the CCFR march. The CCFR and stats about our organization are mentioned in the story, and then an interview with you, obviously, to the, because nobody reads the whole story anymore, and they know that they know exactly how this works. So obviously you're answering for it in the story. Mm-hmm. And that's it. I'm on to the next story. I've formed my opinion. The CCFR are domestic terrorists or whatever, and I'm on to the next story. And this is exactly how they play it. And it isn't completely intentional, in my opinion. I mean, you see it's time after time.
Yeah.
And that's wrong. So what they've done, and certainly what Bill Blair and Mary Liz Power have done, is absolutely objectionable. It's not behavior that any government official should be engaging in, but that is par for the course for those two, at least from what I've seen, in my opinion. So we've served them with a defamation notice, and we intend to litigate them. And you know, they're not the first. You know, we're litigating another so-called journalist, maybe a journalist or not, and we're also litigating The Walrus, which is an online publication that's a registered charity that gets money from, you know, who knows who. I don't know. They have a list of their big donors on their website, so you can check that out and see who's supporting that kind of stuff. But when people lie about us, someone has to do something. You know, there's a lot of people out there in the advocacy business, you know, ranting and raving how they're doing all the heavy lifting and they're doing this and they're doing that and they're standing up for gun owners. It's always, you know, all working quietly behind the scenes. It's never really what they're doing. It's just like, oh, we're just doing work. And they never really detail that. Right. And no one's ever said, you know what, when a journalist stands up and they lie, or the government stands up and they lie about gun owners or about organizations or whatever, not in an attempt to refute the facts, only an attempt to hurt the people that are trying to bring the truth. They never ever sit and have a one-on-one conversation in public, but they'll launch this crap. And then what they do is they try to blame you. They try to say, oh, it's you that's launching vitriol. It's always, they always blame you of what it is that they're either doing or what they started. And somebody has to stand up to these people. And the CCFR is that somebody. And the reason why we can do that is because people are supporting us. They're giving us money. So right. We're turning around and we're suing these people. And, you know, defamation is a very difficult thing to demonstrate damages, especially if you're growing, right? Even though there is damage, you can't quantify it. Therefore, you're getting peanuts back, if anything. But at least we're holding them to account. And, you know, I'm hoping to get a favorable ruling in the other, with the other journalists that we're suing and the other publication that we're suing. And, you know, Bill Blair, if it goes there, we served a notice. We don't know what their response is going to be. And then maybe we'll sue some other people in connection to this story. And, you know, we're not doing it indiscriminately or using it as a weapon. It's like, at some point, people have to be accountable when they lie and they frame people for things that they didn't do in the public square. It's just wrong. So somebody has to do it. And it's, you know, I know I'm going on and on about this, but it's interesting. Because when we started the CCFR, we were not, you know, a lawsuit organization. We were relying on other organizations to do that. And I said exactly that. We don't do lawsuits. We don't do legal action because we have other groups that say that's what they do. And we're not here to replicate. We're here to do PR work. But none of that legal stuff was actually happening. And even worse, some people would say they would happen, collect money and not do it. So, you know, it's like, well, somebody's got to actually do it. Somebody has to actually get in there and work, you know, and it's not glamorous and it's not fun. It's not comfortable and it's not good for your future. Right. I had a brilliant career before this, you know, and now I'm going to wear and you too, Tracy, and we're going to wear the gun lobby, you know, thing for the rest of our lives, but somebody has to do this work. So anyway, if you're wondering why we're doing these things, this is exactly the reason. So we can do these things because you guys out there are supporting us. You're giving us money because it costs money to do these things. If we didn't have the money to do these things, then we would be sitting here talking about, oh, we're doing all the heavy lifting and, you know, strong voice for gun owners and we won't take it and all the rest of that crap. And then not do anything. So the only reason we can do it is because you guys are helping us. So thank you for that.
Yes. Thank you. It was especially frustrating to me because I missed all the hoopla that went on all day long. You know, I was at a cemetery and then I come back and my first instinct was to reach out to Catherine and see how I could help her mitigate this and talk her through it and provide her any resources she needs. Like, we had a great conversation. She was super thankful. And then this all blows up and suddenly I'm painted as the villain. And it's literally the exact opposite. Bill Blair's statement, I'm not going to read the full thing, but the statement he put out, the part that's concerning, is he says, it is unacceptable that the gun lobby has promoted threats, intimidation, and harassment of people who are just trying to do their jobs. This is reckless and completely unacceptable. Far too often, we have seen the real-world implications of doxing or making someone's personal information available online without their consent or the express purpose of having others to make threats against them. It must stop. And then he goes on. But that, like, literally none of that happened. None of that happened. To insinuate that it did, or I'm in any way responsible for the actions of random people on the internet, it's reprehensible to me. I'm a woman in a public position as well. And here's the funny thing. The whole idea is, you know, that we don't want people bombarding with hate mail and awful messaging to these women that are in powerful positions. Yet this message that Bill Blair put out there and the following story that came with the Globe and Mail from Patrick White, that's exactly what happened to me. My inbox was full of hate mail. Everybody's all over accusing me of doing all these things. And meanwhile, if they had been at the conversation I had with Catherine, it's literally the opposite. So This is one of those times that, no, it's not okay to just be stomped on by these people. And that's it. It's got to stop. Like, it's divisive and it's not helpful. It's got to stop.
Yeah. Well, and these people don't know how. They have no capacity for self-reflection, which I go out of my way to make sure that I stop every once in a while. I'm like, okay, is what I'm doing the right thing? Is it helping? Is it not helping? And I readjust the way that I approach things all the time because I don't want to be like them. I don't want to be a hypocrite. And, you know, yeah, these people are going to just destroy everything. They can't, you know, and time after time, how many times have I said, you know what, let's cut out all this mudslinging and let's just sit down together. Roll cameras so that everybody can be a part of this conversation. Let's just talk about these things. It's like, nope, not a chance. We will continue to load up our catapults, you know, full of horse manure and just keep slinging them because, you know, I don't know, maybe they think it's fun. But anyway, Bill's going to be held to account. And if we have to hold him to account directly, we will. But just amazing. Just it's again, like I say, institutions in Canada are in free fall collapse. Like truly, they truly, truly are. So much so that the government is figuring out ways to censor the internet. That's how bad it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is not overstating anything. Like, take a look around. That's how bad it really is. So, and it's all because these people can't conduct themselves as reasonable adults. And yeah, we sling mud too, because we're getting mud slung on us, you know, even for when sure. It comes to the doctors. Look all the way back. I documented it in a video called, what was it? It was Gun Lobby versus Activist Doctors or something like that. And I'm like, I documented
there's
it.
There's two different videos I think you made about that. Yeah, reshare them for everybody listening. I'll reshare them out there just so you can see some of the history. And here's the problem, Rod, is we're working under the assumption that other people, these other groups, the doctor groups and Paulie Souvier and whoever, the anti-gun lobby groups, we're working under the assumption that they want the same thing we want, which is a reduction or the end to violent crime in Canada. And I don't think they do. Maybe they want that, but that's not the goal of their organization. And this is a problem. We want to reduce violence and crime, and they want to reduce gun ownership. And that's why we can't meet in the middle, because we're not rowing our boats in the same direction. So,
you're right. That's not why they're in it.
No, they're not in it for the same reasons we are. So,
and I have no problem being honest. You know, one of the biggest reasons why we are active trying to get, the gang problem dealt with and domestic violence and suicide and all these things. I mean, look at what just happened with Kathleen Finley.
Yeah,
finally, 988 is coming to Canada. And isn't it interesting how it's right after we put that on TV and spread it all over social media? She's been trying to do that for years.
I know.
And for
Todd
some
Doherty
reason,
picked it up. Todd Doherty's been a good friend to myself and Colin. Yeah. He does veterans issues. He had the PTSD. E211 or C211, I think it was, the PTSD bill. So he's very concerned about mental health issues. And if the goal really is to save lives, why weren't any of these groups, you know, they don't mind using suicide stats to hammer gun owners over the head and justify the forced confiscation of our property. But to do something tangible and effective and immediate, like helping Finley come out with 988, they never touched it. They never touched it. Yeah. No. And I noticed they tweeted about it afterwards. And I thought
afterwards. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, and don't
thanks
get me
for your help.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not trying to take credit for it finally happening, because Kathleen Finley did all the work herself as a volunteer by herself, almost.
Yeah.
Almost. Right. She's had a few other people with her. But yeah, a real advocate. And finally it happened. And that's all, you know, so I'm focused on that. That's awesome. But, you know, anyway, it's just an interesting situation. You know, it's just like gun control in general. If you start looking at the details, the reality is night and day from what you think it is. If you're just the, you know, casual observer using media and government and, you know, doctors wearing white coats telling you, you know, hey, I'm a doctor, just listen, I'm right even when I'm wrong. It's, yeah, the reality is very, very, very different. And, you know, to be completely overt, I was going to say that one of the chief reasons why we take an interest in reducing suicide, or why we take an interest in reducing gang violence, is to save ourselves from that too.
Oh yeah.
Like, that, just to be totally honest, right? Like, I mean, I wouldn't be an advocate, an activist running around trying to get the gang violence problem, because I don't see it where I live. Well, we have a little bit where I live, right? But it just isn't my issue. I'm a gun owner. And then I'm like, well, what's the real problem? And that's what drew me over there. And that's why we put, you know, 30% of our effort trying to, say, raise attention to the root causes, so we can get it dealt with. And, you know, probably 60%, so I can just be left alone. And so millions of other gun owners can just be left alone. We're not the reason. So whether or not, you know, I or the organization is an activist trying to do the right thing for communities to solve these root issues, we're dragged into that debate, and we're doing everything we can to help that. You know, I mean, we're financing television shows just to get the word out, to get people to pay attention to those root causes, so that we're better off for everybody, including gun owners. But anyway, that's quite an interesting thing. So, speaking of the free fall collapse of institutions.
Better.
Yeah, I know. As I'm talking, I'm like, how do I spin this into a positive? Because it's, you know, Christmas is coming. But you know what? After you listen to this podcast, it will be Christmas. You forget about it till the new year. But speaking of collapsing media, which probably couldn't be worse, you've got this longtime, you know, commentator or journalist or whatever however he defines himself, Bob Hepburn, over at the Toronto Red Star, who's decided that he's going to step into your life.
Yeah. So I'm assuming he's got some connection to somebody on the opposite side of table for me, which is fine. But yeah, I've never actually heard of him, never spoken with him. I've never interviewed with him. He knows absolutely zero about me and what kind of person I am. And I see the story being shared around, and it's something along the lines of Aaron O'Toole should distance himself from the worst of the Conservative Party. So I, you know, I see that link and I'm like, oh my God, who is the worst in the party? So I click on it. Number one was Derek Sloan. You know, he's just a very traditional conservative. He's, you know, a little bit uber religious. So sometimes that can be interpreted different ways. So, okay, Derek Sloan, he ran for leadership. Leslyn Lewis, she's a doctor and a lawyer, a prominent woman of color in the business industry, also ran for leadership and is getting herself into the political ring. Very well respected. And then, of course, third place was Pierre Poilievre, who is a, you know, former minister under the Harper government. And he's the shadow minister for finance. I'm sure everybody knows who he is. He's, you know, front bench, literally the A-team for the Conservative Party. And then the fourth worst conservative was me. And I was like, well, it was mixed feelings, because first of all, it's, you know, it's not great having people say these things about you. But on the other hand, I'm like, wait a minute, you're throwing me in a bucket with Pierre Poilievre? Like, okay, I'll take it, I suppose, right? I mean, I suppose from a liberal, uber liberal, far left point of view, like Bob Hepburn's, I guess it makes sense that you know, people like Pierre or people like me would be the worst for him, right? So anyways, yeah, he basically, it's a story calling out Aaron O'Toole, telling him that we should all be, you know, sent off to the gulags, and that's the end of it. So I saw that. I shared it around. To be perfectly honest, I have no idea who Bob Hepburn is or who he thinks he is. But, you know, there's the opinions of a lot of people that matter to me. He happens to not be one of them. So I more or less shared it around for some notoriety. I mean, I'm a big fan of Pierre Poilievre. He's a local Ottawa MP, and he's done a fantastic job holding the government to account and catching them in all their scandals. And
yeah, well, yeah. And Bob Hepburn, like, what a hack, right? So I tweeted, like, just a completely doesn't exist for any good reason. You know, it's just interesting. I mean, you know, it's like, well, who should Aaron O'Toole, what kind of good, reputable people should Aaron O'Toole hang around with? Like maybe like Justin Trudeau. Talk
right?
about the most flawed, monstrously incapable individual, you know, in Canada right now. And that has the most influence, which is, you know, what, Bill Morneau? Is he another guy that's of upstanding moral character that you should be seen with to help your own image? How about that? What's that guy's name?
Marwan Tabera.
Here's another great. Maybe we should surround ourselves with these types of people,
the
right?
Best so of the Liberal Party.
Well, yeah. Come on, man.
Come on.
You know, that's it. So anyway, again, right? Free fall and not by any external force. It's them. It's themselves, you know, setting themselves on fire and then wondering and then being angry and frustrated and lashing out even more because people think that they're a joke. I mean, Bob Hepburn, I bet you couldn't get hired at BuzzFeed. You know, like that is BuzzFeed level stuff.
Yeah,
from the Toronto Star, right?
It's junk. And,
but it wasn't, but that isn't it. It kept going.
Oh yeah. So that wasn't enough. So he came out with an article, I believe yesterday morning, and it's his, you know, his annual review, the 10 winners and 10 losers of 2020. So, you know, you read through the winners and it's like Justin Trudeau and, what's a
finance minister? Well, he won an election. But that's about it. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Anyways, all these things. And then there was a long list of people he thought was losers, including Doug Ford, the Adams barbecue guy. I don't know. There was a bunch of other stuff on there. And then in 10th place, the final spot, he reserved it for me. And I thought, wow, like I must really be on your mind, Bob. Like I'm taking up a lot of real estate in your small mind. So, you know, I thought like I'm receiving a lot of awards from this guy lately. And then, you know, I was talking about it. Actually, I have an 18-year-old daughter here and we were talking about it. She goes, well, you know, like why does he think you're so bad? And I said, well, here's how I look at it. 2020 has been a rough year, I think, for everybody, not just in Canada, not just the gun lobby, you know, literally the entire globe. We've got crazy things that have happened, right from wildfires to the Iran plane bombing. We had the riots for George Floyd, the explosion in Lebanon, the global pandemic, Nova Scotia. These are horrible things that happened. Yet, if me bickering with a faceless and nameless Twitter account about some of the lies they've posted rank so high for Bob, then I'd say he had a pretty decent year from his place of privilege over there in Toronto in the White Ivory Towers, right? So I, you know, there's a lot of awful things and a lot of people, you know, who lost this year, lost their lives, lost their businesses, lost their homes. Like there's a lot that was lost this year. So for Bob to think that me bickering back and forth on Twitter with, you know, with a faceless account is somehow makes me the 10th worst, you know, loser in 2020 in Canada shows me just how easy Bob has it. Right.
Yeah, it's just what they are and what Bob is completely overt. You know, he's a joke and their papers. And it's people like him that have turned the Toronto Star into a joke, into a penny stock. Right. You know, the real truth is Bob Hepburn's one of the top losers of 2020 and he did it to himself and he made the Toronto Star a top loser. That's anyway. All right. You know what?
Yeah.
We got to turn it around. There we go. Get those jingle bells going for God's sakes.
More jingle bells.
We need help.
It doesn't need more cowbell. It needs more jingle bells.
Yeah, that's for sure. Anyway, hopefully we haven't driven everybody into a depressive nightmare for the holidays. But you know, this is this is our business. This is what you and I have to deal with. Well, basically every day as a way to make a living, you know? So it's not glamorous, but at the same time, we're doing good work, and you know, somebody's got to do that work, right? Somebody's got to face these people and fight with them and show them that we're not just going to, you know, they can't just print something in a newspaper. We're going to roll over and just give up all our property and our rights and firearm rights themselves, the right, you know, right or privilege. It doesn't matter. The ability to own and use firearms is extremely important. It's critical to a free society for a variety of different reasons. So, yep. You know, it's worth protecting. It's worth supporting. Our supporters have shown us that. And we're just going to continue to do it, despite the fact that we have, you know, corrupt doctors and former journalists like, you know, like Bob Hepburn thrashing around like a complete idiot, trying to smear people and just making himself look like a clown in the process. So anyway,
well, and at the end of the day, if we're on all these people's hit lists, then we're doing something right. And I know that sounds cliche, but if they think any of this bad behavior is, you know, if it's geared towards getting us to slow down or take our foot off the gas, not happening. I'm taking it down a gear, actually. So,
not even close. I have, you know, we have big plans.
Oh yeah,
people are going to see like literally next month. You know, yeah. And I've said that, and we've rolled big stuff out, and there's plenty more to come. And they have no idea. They have no idea what's coming.
No, so. Put on your helmets, kids. It's going to be a rough ride.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. We're not laying down to these people at all.
Nope.
So cool. All right. Well, thanks for that that update. I know it was a little bit lengthy and a little bit dark, but that's some of the stuff that was going on, of course, before Christmas. These people like to keep it light, apparently, and during the holidays. But well, I appreciate the update. Have a great Christmas, and we'll chat with you soon.
Merry Christmas to you guys.
All right, that's going to do it for episode 81 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks, everybody, for joining me. And you know what? I wish you the best holiday season ever. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. You're probably not going to hear from us between Christmas and New Year's. We don't take basically any time off at the CCFR because there's always so much to do. But I would like to take a couple of days and not deal with this stuff. So again, thank you for all your support. If you haven't supported the CCFR, please consider doing that, because we really need the help. You know, we're spending a lot of money on this court case. We're the only firearm organization to directly sue the government in Canadian history. And we've got a phenomenal team behind us. It's the biggest biggest, most expensive team ever assembled on behalf of gun owners. So we're just, yeah, I don't know if we can save your guns by doing that, but we know it hasn't been tried, so we're gonna do it. But again, it's really expensive. And it's also really expensive to litigate government officials and all the rest of that stuff. But we need to fight these people. So if you can possibly make a donation or become a member, if you're not a member now, we greatly appreciate it. You can do that by going to firearmrights.ca. Firearm is singular. Rights is plural. One firearm, many rights, I think some people have said. Firearmrights.ca. And we would really appreciate your support. Other than that, like I said, have a Merry Christmas. Have a happy holiday. Thanks for all your support. Take care, and we'll see you all soon.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.